Good morning and welcome to the KRFY Morning Show. This is your morning show host, Julie Calamine, and it's another Tuesday. Welcome, listeners. Before we get into our interview for the morning, I'd like to give a weather forecast, and I think I'll give an air quality forecast also, since that is going to be a major topic for this morning. Anyway, weather-wise, today we can expect sunny skies, high of 82. Looks beautiful on my U.S. forecast from our U.S. forecast service, and low tonight of 53. Tomorrow, we've got a high of 89, and it looks like there will be some haze in the air. It'll be hazy and then clear in the night with a low of 57. And then coming up the next day, and that'll be Thursday, we've got another sunny day, high near 94. So it's warming up again, and a little bit of wind, and that's going to come from the southeast. So maybe that will blow out some of the haze. Thursday night, mostly clear, and we're getting down to 60. And then Friday, it's another sunny, hot, sunny day. So hot, sunny days happening. Same thing on Saturday, high near 94. Hot, hot summer in Sandpoint. But we know what to do. Stay out of the sun, get some water, and don't do too much. Now, onto an air quality forecast. And as you might understand, it should be good today with that sun and no haze, good tomorrow with also no haziness, but then Thursday it's going to be moderate, and we're going to talk all about that shortly. If you're just joining us, this is KRFY, listener-supported radio for the Idaho Panhandle, and this is the Tuesday Morning Show. All right, listeners, I've got a real treat for us this morning, and it's a very timely interview. This morning, we're going to be joined by Idaho Department of Environmental Quality Regional Airshed Coordinator Dan Smith. Good morning, Dan.
Morning, Julie.
Hey, it's great to have you. You came up from Coeur d'Alene, I think.
Yes, I did.
Yeah, thanks for taking the drive and making the time to talk to us about air quality in Idaho, other places, and particularly here in the Panhandle.
You bet.
Yeah, so tell us, first, if you would, take a minute and tell us a little bit about your relevant background, how you came to be working at the Idaho DEQ.
I have a strange background, and I'm unlike most people in DEQ. I like to joke around with everybody and say that they're all data-driven introverts, and I am not that person. I am the extrovert of the entire agency, and the director gives me grief about it because, you don't have to ask me my opinion. I'll just tell you right up front.
Well, every department needs an extrovert, I say, so you're it.
I like to think so. Of course, you know, being at my strong suit, that's exactly it. But I have an unusual background. My degrees were in natural resource management, and I went to both the University of Wisconsin as in River Falls as well as the University of Montana. So I've been around. Got a good background in natural resource management. Air is our most common natural resource, and I don't think very many people think of it that way. But that's what my background was in. I was a state park manager for many, many years, both in Montana and in Idaho, and I've been around.
Yeah, well, tell us what park in Idaho. Everybody's interested.
I was down in Challis, Idaho at Land of the Yankee Fork State Park. Prior to that, I was in Great Falls, Montana. I managed Giant Springs State Park. I got to build the Lewis and Clark Interpretive Center over there. So if you've been over to Great Falls and seen that center, well, you can thank me later. Mm-hmm. It's really cool.
That's great. What a great background. Anything else you'd like to share?
I started with DEQ here a number of years ago. I was asked to take over for a specific project in the Silver Valley. We were doing what's called a targeted airshed grant, which is a grant put out by the EPA for it's a very competitive grant, for the most polluted places in the United States. Believe it or not, the Silver Valley, West Silver Valley specifically, the Pinehurst through Kellogg through the Kingston area, that little narrow valley had a lot of air quality issues for a long, long time, over 20 years. And so the targeted airshed grant was brought in. I ran a variety of programs there. The most important was a wood stove changeout program. So we were taking old, crummy, non-EPA approved stoves and changing those out and putting in a variety of cleaner burning either wood stoves, gas stoves, electrical, it didn't matter, pellet stoves, something that'll burn more cleanly to improve the air quality in that area. To give you an idea how many I did over 200 stove replacements. There's only 750 households in the area that we dealt with. So I did almost a third of the entire area. And the result of that was it went from being out of attainment with the National Air Quality Standards. Now we are in attainment with the National Air Quality Standards. So the program worked. There were a variety of other programs that went in there. We had an education project in the high school. We did air curtain incinerator to burn up road waste and things like that. So just a great program down there, and it worked really well.
Yes, so, success. And that's what we like to hear about with air quality.
Absolutely. You know, the more that, you know, again, people don't really think about air. You know, it's something that from the moment we're born until the minute we die, we have to have air, and we have to have clean air. And people don't think about that much. We take it for granted, and it's easy to do. It's clear. It's hard to see unless there's smoke in the air. You don't see it. And so you can feel it when the wind is blowing, things like that. But a lot of times, I don't know if too many people wake up in the morning and go, gee, I wonder what the air is like around here. But yeah, they probably should.
More so now than we used to, I would say, due to the fires.
You bet.
Well, all right, a successful program in that Silver Valley, way to go. And then on to the DEQ in Coeur d'Alene. And how long have you been there?
I've been there for about 2 years. I was hired again because I can't keep my mouth shut. I like to engage with people. And the coordinator position deals with a variety of programs. So I deal with school districts, fire departments, economic development. I am the chairman for a national work group through the EPA, the state, local, and tribal wood smoke working group. So I lead that effort. We do a monthly call to keep everybody informed on what's going on. It's a nationwide group. I thought it was going to start out as just me and a few people from the Northwest talking regularly, and the program got some legs. And so now I have over 150 people on our monthly call, everybody from Vermont to Alaska, and it's really kind of cool.
That is amazing. It's good to hear that people are really starting to focus and think about air quality.
Yep.
That's great that you're doing that, and it's coming out of Idaho. Amazing. Well, I'm going to move away from air quality for just a short part of this interview and ask you about what else the state of Idaho deals with in terms of environmental quality. There are a couple other categories, aren't there?
There are all kinds of different categories. We have solid waste, we have hazardous waste, we have underground storage tanks, we have groundwater, we have engineering, we do all the permitting for drinking water systems and wastewater systems. We deal with surface pollution. A good example is when the people down on the lakes are fertilizing their lawns and the stuff runs down and the fertilizer runs into the lake, that creates a eutrophic lake, and the plants are growing inside there. The other problem in Lake Coeur d'Alene is we have a lot of toxic waste at the bottom of the lake. The sediments down at the bottom of the lake can be released by chemical action, primarily through the various things that we're putting into the lake via our lawn care things. Lawn care chemicals help release those heavy metals down in the bottom. Clearly, you don't want those heavy metals floating around in your drinking water or in your fish or in you when you're swimming in the lake. So we deal with a variety of different things.
Yeah, it's a big department, but of course we're focusing on air quality today, and I'm so happy to have you, an expert on this topic. Well, let's get back to it. How long has Idaho and the country really been monitoring air quality?
Well, you know, the Clean Air Act was put forth in 1963, so it's been around for a long time. It was amended a bunch of different times in 1970, 77, 90, and 2022. We've been monitoring air quality in an organized manner for a long time. In this area, pretty much 1988 was when Oregon put in some restrictions on wood stoves, and then Washington followed, as they always do. And then Idaho really didn't ever put in any restrictions until the EPA finally started restricting wood smoke from wood stove, from heaters. And that was done, well, the latest one was 2020 when we restricted him even further. But we've been basically monitoring since the 90s in Idaho. We put forth a series of air quality monitoring systems. So right now I have 5 different air quality monitors, official DEQ air quality monitors that I deal with in the 5 northern counties. There's one in each county.
Okay.
So I have Bonner's Ferry, Sandpoint, Coeur d'Alene, Pinehurst, and then down in St. Mary's. So each county has an official DEQ air quality monitor in there.
Okay. And it must be selected to try and get a good average air quality. You must think hard about where to place that monitor.
We think hard on that, and it's difficult because you're trying to find a place that is representative of the community and of the county. I mean, think about how hard that is. How do you do that? Clearly, the air quality in our urban centers is going to be different than the ones out in the rural areas. But that's where the people are. So you have to be able to figure out what is going to be the best place to help human health and recognize that that's what DEQ really cares about. We're here specifically for human health. And the air quality is a big part of that. So we try to pick a place that's going to be the most representative for those residents of the area.
Yeah, most representative for the most people. That makes sense.
Right.
Well, this leads me to a question about what is the best source then for finding your current air quality? You've talked about where they're located, but for example, and I imagine some of you listeners have done this, I'll go online and there might be 15 different sites that will offer an air quality reading, and they can vary widely.
Right. It's, you know, everybody has a different, computer guys call it algorithms. I don't know what they come up with, but, you know, the basic gist of it is I like to look at the official sites. There are a variety of citizen science projects. If you were to go on my favorite site, which is the fire and smoke map at airnow.gov, which is an EPA site, and it's a national site. So you can actually see, for instance, right now we have the big fires up in British Columbia. You can actually see where the smoke is flowing from those fires. And curiously, right now, the southeastern part of the United States is being highly affected by the British Columbia fires. I find that just fascinating that Atlanta, Georgia is getting smoked out by British Columbia. That's kind of wild. And that map shows that. It also has a bunch of citizen science things. So when you look at the map, there's little squares. The squares are an officially recognized air quality monitor. They're low cost. They're called a Purple Air. And they usually come in a little higher than our official monitors. So you got to take them with a grain of salt. But it shows all kinds of places where we don't have official monitors. And you and I can buy one of these things and put them in our house if we so desire. And then through your internet connection, it'll go into the EPA site. So for people interested in citizen science, that's really an interesting way of going.
Well, I'm going to say that we have a lot of people in this community that are interested in citizen science, and then we just have a lot of people interested in air quality. So I think there will be listeners who will want to run out and get a Purple Air. Where would a person find that, and are they very expensive?
They cost about $275 for the one that would go into the EPA site, and that was the last time I checked. The neat thing about the Purple Air is the EPA has tested these, and they have, again, an algorithm that sort of corrects the monitor for that that will be more accurate than most of the others. There are other things out there that you can buy. They're cheaper ones. There's one by an outfit called Wind, W-Y-N-D, and I like them for the indoor air quality things. They have a little clip-on that you can put in your pocket and measure your personal air quality as you go through the day. They call that the tracker. And of course, like everything nowadays, it's Bluetooth connected. So it goes into your phone and it collects that data. So at the end of the day, you can look at your daily, your personal AQI, if you will, and look at that and say, I'm in good shape, or I better be careful next time I walk into that restaurant. So there's some good things and some bad things about that. But, if you're really interested in your air quality, if you're one of those people who is sensitive, people with asthma, for instance, you're always looking for an asthma trigger, smoke. You walk into somebody's and they're wearing the wrong perfume. All of a sudden you can be, boom, into a asthmatic situation. And these things are really handy for you in that way.
Yes, and we may talk more about this further on in the interview, but it seems like a good time to ask you this question, which is, certainly people with asthma would be sensitive to smoke and pollutants in the air, but they're not the only category of people, are there? There are quite a few categories. Tell us about that.
There are many categories, actually. People with heart disease, anybody with COPD, anybody with long-term, anything to do with your lungs. So a good example was COVID. When COVID was going on, that was very much a respiratory situation, right? And so if you had COVID and you were breathing smoke from forest fires or from a wood stove or for whatever, that could cause you to go into an episode where you needed hospitalization. So it is really, air quality is one of those things. One of the things that we measure is called particulate matter, okay? Think of this as very, very small pieces, microscopic, tiny little things, 2.5 microns. So they're tiny. And they can go from your lungs through your alveoli into your bloodstream. And we don't think of that. We don't think of air pollution going straight into our blood because, we think everything goes through our, through your mouth or something like that. But this will actually go into your bloodstream and can cause you the. So if you're getting pollutants in your body, no matter how you get them, whether you ingest them, whether you're, touching them through your skin, whatever, your lungs are very much a part of that. So these pollutants, these tiny, tiny little particles, whether that is soot from a diesel engine, whether that is soot from your gasoline engine, whether this is very fine road dust, or, like we're experiencing now, forest fire smoke, all have various chemicals, benzenes, other types of chemicals that will get into your bloodstream through your lungs. And these are the things that we measure in our monitors.
Sure. And so this I'm adding questions because you're giving us lots of information. And the first question is, are the tinier particles worse for us? Are they scarier, more hazardous?
Well, breathing dust of any size isn't good for you. Take a snort of sand sometime, you'll be choking. But, and we do measure different size. We go by micron sizes. And so they can go all the way down to a single micron, which is obviously that's the kind of thing that'll transfer directly into your bloodstream. Other things, larger particles, you can cough up. So they get stuck in your lungs and they will jam you up. You don't want to be breathing these larger particles.
Sure, but they can get coughed out a little more easily.
Correct.
Yeah, it makes sense.
So everything, to be disgusting, the hairs in your nose are designed to filter your air. We have various bodily fluids in our sinuses that are designed to collect this stuff. And we have various disgusting ways of getting rid of these things. And, that's just kind of the way it is. I don't know how deep you want me to go into this, Julie, but, we'll stop right there.
Well, I'm getting the idea. Coughing, sneezing, et cetera. It's not so drippy noses, et cetera. All those kinds of things.
There you go.
Well, and the second question that I would add to this then is that, we don't want pollutants going into our bloodstream, but these particles really do affect our breathing. I feel it when there's fire. It sort of where I can feel that I'm not as able to exercise or do my normal activities. You can literally feel it.
Right. Yeah. Right. Pay attention to your body. Your body will tell you that these things are not good for you. It's not rocket science. You don't have to go on to the AQI websites to find out if the air is bad. Your nose is a very effective. Your lungs are a very, very effective way. Listen to your body. And if it's saying go inside, find some clean air, pay attention to that.
I agree. And I've noticed it, and I've trying to really try to pay attention to that. Let's talk about a little bit more about these particles, because they are measured in a number of ways. There's an overall air quality number that's given to us every day. And then there are other numbers, like, as you've said, the PM 2.5 and other PM numbers. Can you help listeners understand what some of those mean?
Sure. So we have what we call PM10, which is 10 microns in diameter. To give you an idea, human hair is about 20 microns across. So this is, it's smaller, much smaller than a human hair. Actually, that's not exactly right. It's more like 20 times bigger than a PM10. So anyway, they're pretty fine as well. And so like the wind monitor that I mentioned earlier, it will go all the way down to a single micron, but it goes all the way up to PM10. PM10 was the original particulate matter. That's what PM stands for, particulate matter, was the very first thing that we started to measure. And that was due to road dust and larger particles like that. As we started measuring the health effects of particulate matter on people, we found that the finer and finer particles were the ones that were really causing us more problems health-wise because of that ability to transfer directly into your bloodstream. So it was determined that those really fine particles are a bigger hazard, and they are the main pollutant level that we're looking at with our national air quality standards. Now, there are other things that we measure as well. We have carbon monoxide, which, you know, we always hear about with, you know, people not running their cars in their garages because it'll kill you. Very true. There's sulfur dioxide that produces the acid rain when it mixes up in the air. There's nitrous oxides, which form up in the atmosphere through the and variety of things that come through with interaction with sunlight. So as things are entering the upper atmosphere and moving around, like the Canadian fires are doing right now, sunlight is working on these things and literally changing the chemical composition of some of these compounds into some things that are sometimes more benign, sometimes more dangerous. So it's really a curious and interesting study to see what these things
it
do.
Is. And are most of these compounds dangerous to our breathing, or are they doing other things like dropping into lakes, or is it a combination of all of these things?
It's all and everything. You've hit it on the head. It, you know, it affects human health. It affects the environment. It'll affect soil. Acid rain falling on soils strips all kinds of nutrients out of there, creates situations where plants can't grow and fish can't swim. So it's kind of a spooky situation.
Yeah. Is there one main air pollutant that the DEQ worries about, or not really?
Right now, in Idaho anyway, particulate matter is the biggest concern. We also measure ozone at a variety of places, particularly down in the Boise area. Ozone is a concern. It's more of an urban situation. The more people you have, the more motor vehicles you have, the better chances of ozone being a problem. But we do measure it across the state to make sure that everything is within acceptable parameters.
Sure. I wanted to step back just a bit and talk about overall air quality in the country. I'm thinking back to like the 70s when, all kinds of things were really negatively affecting the air and cities and, you know, leaded gas, all that. And there would be noticeable smog. You would see it. And it seems like we went through a period of time where we really worked on a number of things like that and air quality improved. And now, of course, we're dealing with other issues. I'm just wondering, how are we doing as a country? It seemed like we were worse, we're better, and maybe getting worse again.
Well, you know, 1963, which is when the Clean Air Act was enacted, that was a long time ago, golly. what is that, 60 years? I'm getting old. Anyway, the upshot of it is that we've been working at this for a while. And yes, things are getting better. When you look at, let's use automobiles as an example. Automobile exhaust is a major form of pollution in the United States, even today. But think of it, 1963, my Chevy was getting about 10 miles to the gallon. I was burning leaded gas. So I was creating a lot of pollution. There were no pollution control devices, no catalytic converters or anything on that. It was a straight shot right out into the atmosphere. No, there weren't as many of us. Our population was lower and the fewer cars were there. But we were cranking out the pollutants. The same thing held true with industry. Industry was, we had coal-fired power plants everywhere doing acid rain and other stuff. And there was no regulation on air pollution whatsoever from any of the big industries, whether it's the steel industry back east, whether it was mining activities, smelting activities, oil refineries, et cetera, et cetera. There was many, many, many sources of pollution back in those days. Since the EPA has come into existence, which happened in the early 70s, we can thank Richard Milhouse Nixon for establishing the Environmental Protection Agency. But those kind of regulations have restricted the amount of air pollution going into our air nationwide. And we became a leader worldwide in how are we controlling our air pollution. So things have gotten better. Are they perfect? No. Again, there's more of us. We can't get around this. You know, we hear a lot about our carbon footprint. This is very true. We just keep on pumping out pollution. So even though we're getting better at reducing our personal level, there's more of us. We still want to have all the things that we want. We're Americans. We are real good at sucking up natural resources and turn them into various waste products. And so it's something we have to keep an eye on. But you're right, Julie. We have improved on a nationwide basis, and we continue to get better, but it's still something you got to keep an eye on.
Yeah, it's an ongoing project for the whole country and the whole world. And, of course, what's happening in the environment with the drying world and forest fires, et cetera, is going to add a whole nother layer. Well, we are going to take a short song break and come back and talk a bit more about just air quality in general, and then I think we'll go on to talking a little bit about what individuals can do to make sure that their environment is as healthy as it can be.
Sounds great.
All right, so we've got a fun one. Hello, Sandpoint listeners. If you're just joining us, this is KRFY, Community Radio for the Idaho Panhandle. I'm Julie Calamine, one of your Tuesday morning show hosts, and so happy this morning to be joined by Dan Smith, who is the Regional Airshed Coordinator for Idaho's Department of Environmental Quality. Dan, we have been just covering a lot of topics.
This is fun.
It is fun. We must be geeks because it's fun for me, too.
Well, you know, nothing beats fun for having a good time.
That's right. Anyway, we've covered a bunch, but we've got more to cover, so I'm going to get right to it. During the song break, we were talking about how fire and the fire season has affected Idaho. And we had a run of pretty good years. And then in recent years, we've had so much smoke, and it comes locally and it comes from far away. Let's talk about it.
You know, we are in a situation right now where British Columbia smoke is coming right down, and it's pretty much missing North Idaho for the most part. We've been lucky. But in the past, we've had it where it's drifted right in and stuck around. And so there's a lot of different factors. And then Oregon, Washington, California fires, when the town of Paradise burned up, all those houses, we got to breathe their smoke. Great. You know, and that's kind of how that works. The various layers in the atmosphere trap and transport smoke from very, very long distances. As I mentioned earlier in the show, right now, Atlanta, Georgia, of all places, is being affected by smoke from British Columbia. That's crazy. And yet, that's the way that smoke travels. Air is a strange and wonderful and curiously easy way to transport pollutants.
It is. Let's talk about that error high in the sky versus the error from someone burning a slash pile locally. Is there a difference?
There is. And that's a big part of my job. Every day, and when you look at our predictions on the what's the air quality going to be tomorrow or the next day or whatever, you can blame it all on me. If it's wrong, it's because I screwed up. But what I tried, I do that for the five northern counties. I do all the daily AQIs, send that out to all the news agencies, et cetera. And so anything that is published, you can put Dan Smith on the bottom of it because that's what I do. And so every day we come out with the daily AQI. When we are doing this, we look at a variety of sources. We look at, you guys have heard of the ceiling if you're flying an airplane. You know, where is the ceiling? You can look up and see that. What are the lower layers of the clouds doing? What are the upper layers of the clouds doing? Do we have those big cumulus clouds that are towering up into the sky? All of that affects smoke dispersion from a local source. It also affects transport. So the higher levels of smoke, while they're higher up in the air, they can come down as well. So at night, you've heard of an inversion. An inversion is where there is cold air with warm air over the top of it, preventing the air at the surface from rising up and dispersing into the upper layers of the atmosphere. All right? So local smoke, the smoke that you and I are making here in North Idaho, when we have an inversion, typically in the evening, the warm layer comes down and it traps it. And I look at exactly what that is. Sometimes it's only 50 meters. 50 meters is not very high. What is it? 75 feet up? So when you look at something like that, it's not that high. And if your smoke goes up, and we've probably all seen this, as you're driving down the road in one of our small narrow valleys, you can see where smoke from somebody's wood stove or a slash pile or whatever rises up, and then all of a sudden it just takes off horizontally. That is a classic inversion. And these little mountain valleys like we are surrounded with in North Idaho, every small valley has its own air quality. So while I can be real general with the countywide stuff, your little local air quality may be very different based on what the inversion is going to do.
That is so interesting because having a friend with asthma, we do take a look at the AQI, and it can change from hour to hour depending on the website that you're looking at. But sometimes we'll read that it looks moderate and we'll look up in the sky and it looks great where we are, and vice versa.
Well, and recognize that when I'm putting out my daily predictions, that's for a 24-hour average. So recognize that, you know, the way averages work, half of the time it's higher than that and half of the time it's lower than that. That's just the way it is. So when I put out my 24-hour average, that is not. And sometimes in the morning, it can be very polluted. When we have an inversion that's trapping all of our local pollution down close to the ground, particularly in the winter when everybody's burning their wood stoves, you can see a huge spike in the pollutant levels close to the ground. Now, as the sunlight comes and creates the drafts that move all that air up and make the inversion rise up, then all of a sudden you see good dispersion and your air quality typically will improve. The best air quality is typically in the middle of the afternoon, about 2 to 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And then as people come home from work again in the wintertime, they're firing up that wood stove and getting things going. You'll see a spike that rises up in the evening and stays up pretty high overnight.
And then let's add heat, because in the summertime, they tell us to be careful during that hot time when there's poor air quality. Why is that?
Well, heat and air quality go together. The biggest problem is its effect on fire, okay? And inversions do take place in the summertime. We've had a number of weeks, the last few weeks, where every night we have a pretty good inversion, all right? When it gets really hot, like this coming weekend, it's going to be back into the 90s. Right now, today is a beautiful day, 80-something. I'll take 80. This is marvelous. We have really good air quality, and the wind is such that yesterday particularly was real breezy. It blew all of that BC smoke to the east. So sorry for North Dakota, but not that sorry. You know, I'll take clean air. Anyway, the upshot of it is that we still have inversions in the summertime. So we're seeing at nighttime, I've seen some elevated levels of air pollution in various places. But that's been dispersing. Usually about 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning, it takes off and disperses and is diluted and goes away.
Okay, so this is helping me. Our forecasts are an overall forecast. There are microclimates all over the place in Idaho. Air quality is going to vary throughout the day. It's a mysterious and confusing way to understand it, which makes me think a personal air quality monitor wouldn't be the worst idea.
It's kind of a cool idea.
Yeah.
And there are ways, if you are, we mentioned the Purple Air personal air quality monitor. And this is it's about $275. You can install it. This is an outdoor air quality monitor, so it goes outside and measures your outdoor air quality. Outdoor air quality is the same as, well, nah, where does your indoor air come from? Outside. So you got to start somewhere. That's sort of your baseline. Typically, indoor air quality varies because what you're doing in the house will, if you want to cook bacon, you're going to raise your particulate level. If you're going to cook anything, you're going to raise your particulate level in your house. Frying stuff is particularly nasty. Your dog, cat, pets produce particulate matter, you know. I hate to say it.
Yeah, well, so which brings me to another question, which is, is our indoor quality of air generally better or worse than the outdoor air quality? It depends, I suppose.
Everything depends, Julie. but typically, the indoor air quality is going to be less good than the outdoor air quality. Now, again, if you have a forest fire blazing in your neighborhood, you're going to have some pretty bad stuff outside. And then your indoor air quality is going to be better. Also, your HVAC system, your heating and air conditioning system, has some filters. You know, if you're smart, you'll be changing those filters, putting in a higher rated filter instead of having a MERV 8 or 9. You might want to go to a MERV 13 if your system is able to handle it. And it's very, very helpful to clean your own air. You can do that. When we have these high air pollution situations, when the AQI is high outside, close your windows up. Let your heating system run your fan. Run it through that filter. That'll help. It'll help some. You know, don't cook. You know?
Yeah.
Use your head. Don't be burning candles or other smoke-producing situations in your house. And if you're a smoker, put those rascals out. You know? I mean, come on. Use your head. And so there's a variety of things that you want to do to improve your air situation in your home.
Sure. And I've also heard that just keeping your keeping things healthy and clean inside, vacuuming regularly, all that can help.
Well, it depends on your vacuum cleaner. If you have a vacuum cleaner, is a great way to put dust in the air.
They
always tell you to dust after you vacuum, right? Because, you know, you're stirring all that stuff up. Carpeting, holy cow. Let's not get into carpeting, but the few things will collect particulate matter better than carpeting.
Oh, boy. It's
I know.
Getting harder and harder.
You know, get a hardwood floor and, you know, throw your pets out and, you know, yeah, never mind.
Well, let's talk about families or individuals who can do some of those things, but not everything. Maybe they can't part with their dog and cat and might have to occasionally cook some bacon. How do we best work on filtering our indoor air so that we can do the best that we can?
You know, every year that we have a forest fire event, which is almost every summer, usually August around here is smoke season, as we call it. People have a run on these commercial air filters, and you know, some of them will cost $500-$600. They have a HEPA filter in there. You have to change a filter in there all the time and stuff. And they work. They work really well. But they're not designed for an entire home. So if you have an average size home, let's say you have, you know, 2,000 square foot home, and your commercial air filter is good for about one room. in that. You can't put that down next to your heater or your furnace and expect it to clean your entire house. And your furnace isn't going to clean all the air either. That filter that you have in there, it's not enough. So we always have a run on those things. There are a variety of ways of doing that. You can take a box fan. Almost everybody has a 20-inch box fan, right? And take that, get a 20-by-20-inch MERV 13 filter down at the hardware store, get a good one, and duct tape it to the dang fan.
Yeah, I suppose front or back wouldn't matter. It'll be moving air through it. Or does it matter?
It does matter. You want to have it on the intake side. So you want it to pull into that filter and then push it through. And filters usually have an airflow arrow on there one way or another. Make sure that that's going into the fan and pulling it the correct way. So that's really a kind of, and that works really well. There was a scientific study done by the EPA. And this gal that works for EPA is just an amazing scientist. Her name is Amara Holder, and she's just a brilliant human. I love her. She really is cool. Anyway, she did this study of all these commercial air filters as well as these DIY kind of air filters. And she found out that the clean air delivery rate on one of these fans can be as good as the commercial one that you pay $500. So you can buy one for $500 if you want. Great. If that makes you feel good, spend the money. I'm all for it. You know, we got to support our economy. On the other hand, if you're not into that and you want to have some fun building your own, go get a box fan. Now, here's a really cool way of doing it. There's a thing called the Corsi Rosenthal box. If one air filter is good, then four is better. So what you do is you create this box and you tape them up. And I use masking tape. It worked great. And on a chunk of cardboard on the bottom, put your fan on top, tape everything up so it's all solid. So all that filtration is there. If you use 2-inch filters, you're quadrupling your filter. And it actually is 4 to 5 times better than these commercial air filters. And it'll cost you about probably $100 if you don't have a box fan. If you have a box fan, the filters will cost you about $60-$70.
Yeah, and that's the good filters. They're expensive but worth it in this, in all instances, and in this instance particularly.
That's exactly right. And the clean air delivery rate is really, really high on those things. So as an example, just because I'm the air quality guy and I do these kind of things, I took a little pop-up shelter. I surrounded it with plastic wrap and put my box filter inside that thing, the Corsi Rosenthal box. And then I took my smoker tube from my barbecue and I stuck it in there and I made it really smoky inside this sort of sealed off area, you know, and there was this tent in the backyard full of smoke. And then I pulled the smoker tube out and I turned on the box fan. In 15 minutes, it totally cleaned out the air in there.
Wow.
They're very effective, and I highly recommend them. Anybody can afford a Corsi Rosenthal box. Now, again, it's not going to probably do your whole house, but it'll certainly do your bedroom.
Yeah, so, and those hours of sleep are important to get some clean air.
That's exactly right.
That's right.
Or if we're having a real nasty air quality event like we have every once in a while, make a clean room. Put your Corsi box in there. Turn it on. You're at least that much better off than you were an hour ago.
Yeah, what a great idea. And I must add, listeners, are you hearing a person who's even geekier than you are? Who do we know that would make his own room, smoke it up, and then test the air quality? I am impressed.
I tried to do it on a video for the Department of Environmental Quality, and unfortunately, I live close to the airport, and a dang airplane kept flying over. But how to build that is on our DEQ website, and we've put it on our Facebook page and a variety of other ways of doing it. So if you want to see Big Dan Smith putting together his geeky Rosenthal box, you can find that on the internet.
Okay, we go to DEQ
air quality, and It's in there somewhere. I can't find it, but
I bet we can find that. That sounds like an interesting one. Dan, I don't think we've mentioned it enough, but let's mention your favorite website for monitoring air quality, and then let's talk about the Idaho site. I have to imagine it's pretty good for our area.
It is. It is. My favorite is the fire.airnow.gov. And that's cool because it has the fire map and the smoke dispersion across the nation. And so if you find it as interesting as I do, this covers all of North America, and it shows where the smoke is going. And it shows the various layers of smoke and where it's concentrated. There are different shades of gray depending on the smoke concentrations. And then you can see all the different air quality monitors across the United States. Every state does the same thing as Idaho does. We have air quality monitors all over the place, as well as those cool little citizen science purple air ones, which are little squares on there. The official monitors are round circles. And they're probably better than the air now, or the purple airs, but they're still pretty cool. And that's fire.airnow.gov. The other site that you were talking about, Julie, is the Idaho DEQ site, and that's a lot longer URL. It's airquality.deq.idaho.gov/home/map.
Okay. And what about IQ Air? Is that one affiliated with anybody? No.
I have no idea about that
site. Okay, I won't go there anymore then. I'll go back to Air Now.
There are lots of sites, Julie, out there that you'll see, you know, a lot of like weather.com, weather pages will have a link to various sites. You know, and I've seen a lot of variation in there. You referred to it earlier. I prefer the actual official sites because, A, we have two people in North Idaho that are dedicated to making sure that those monitors that we're looking at are calibrated correctly. They go through monthly tests. They have data assurance.
They're right on. We know we'll
they
get
really
the right
try hard info. To keep them going.
Well, Dan, as we come to the end of what's been a great interview, my gosh, it's flown by. I can't believe how much we've covered, but I'm going to try and summarize. In general, the U.S. is working hard to improve air quality. We still have challenges, fire being one of them, and growing population, et cetera. There are things people can do to, one, help air quality by, not using as many fossil fuels, being inside the house, being careful with what you're doing when you're inside, pets, fire, cooking, vacuuming even. Let's see. We have good information to help us on a daily basis, and if we want it, even on an instantaneous basis, if we're willing to pay out a little money to get a monitor. And there are things we can do in the house that are a little bit MacGyverish. We can make our own filters. We can go out and buy things. So we can really do some things.
That's right. And you're responsible for your own air in great, you know, in your house. You have ways of keeping yourself in a more healthy situation. And you know, that's the whole idea of this. Let's start paying attention to our air instead of ignoring it.
Yes. Oh, and one other item that I wanted to mention, we talked about it in over the break, and we just have a few minutes left, so if you would touch on this. Air quality is not a worry simply for people that have compromised lungs. It's for everybody because the effects are cumulative.
It's exactly right. And, you know, we all are breathing the same air. But certain people are more sensitive to it. So whether, you know, any kind of lung ailment that you might have, we've all had bronchitis, we've all had sinus infections, we've all had various things that affect our respiratory abilities. Anytime you add air pollution into one of those situations, you're worsening that situation. So it isn't just for the asthmatics. It isn't just for the people with COPD. This is for everybody. COVID brought that home. COVID as a respiratory disease really hit that home. And we saw people that, who knows, maybe when we had a smoke episode and somebody had COVID, we don't have good data how many people actually died because of that situation. But I can guarantee you that some people did. And that is kind of tragic. But again, you have to pay attention. Otherwise, you're not going to be aware of what's going on.
Taking care of your lungs and your health. Well, we're coming to a close for a very interesting and informative interview here with Idaho's Department of Environmental Quality. Dan Smith is the Regional Airshed Coordinator. Dan, any last little comments in the minute or two we've got left?
I'd just like to thank you, Julie, for having us up here. It's really important. And again, it's something that people take for granted. And I always tell people, air is the most important natural resource we have. And when people argue with me, I say, go without it for about 5 minutes and we'll talk.
Yeah, there you go. Well, on that note, I'm going to conclude what's been a informative, a great interview. KRFY listeners, this is Community Radio for the Idaho Panhandle. This is Julie Calamine, who has been your Tuesday morning show host, and we've had a great time talking about air quality. Dan and I picked this song together, and we may not get it all out before the end of the hour, but hopefully we will. And together we thought that a good final song for folks living in Sandpoint would be Deep Purple's Smoke on the Water. Have a great week, everybody.